and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covet moves for expanding its sphere of influence. It is a system which has conscripted vast human and material resources into the building of a tightly knit, highly efficient machine that combines military, diplomatic, intelligence, economic, scientific, and political operations. Its preparations are concealed, not published. Its mistakes are buried, not headlined. Its dissenters are silent, not praised.
Billions of people just living out their lives. Oblivious.
Choice is an illusion created between those with power and those without.
I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Thank you, John Larson. I receive your kind words on behalf of all of our courageous members of the House of Representatives who want the best for the American people. And what we can do that is best for them in the next 24 hours is to pass affordable, accessible health care for all Americans. The best for all Americans is to have 32 million more people to have health insurance in our country.
Oh,
the best for...
Piece of stinking filth.
Sitting in shop. This is AJ of the InfoWars. Listen to the Shaliak. This is Alex Jones of InfoWars. Listen to Shaliak on the Cold Reality News and Report.
This is the coolest thing I have ever seen.
Well, hello there.
This week on Cold Reality Radio. More on what's been going on in Nightmarica and around the world. A little bit of music. In the second hour, I'll be joined by Clint to talk about random things. Couple of his recent posts at realityblogger.wordpress.com. The U.S. War Machine's annual budget could buy every homeless American a $1 million home. Isn't that nice? U.S. downplays a new Syrian massacre. How the deep state's cronies steal from you. A third of cash is held by five U.S. companies. Hanford Nuclear Reservation to become a park. Obama's reign of terror. It is no measure of help to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. How technology hijacks people's minds from a magician and Google's design ethicist. Hugo Chavez's daughter, age 36, is worth $4.2 billion. U.S. suicide rate surges to a 30-year high. Rise of the right in Austria. Patriots at the gate. Americans preparing for battle against government. Washington Post poll hides Trump plus two. That and more on today's edition of Cold Reality Radio. Welcome, everyone. It is May 22nd, 2016. I'm going to be here for the next 2 hours. I'm going to get over to the chat room, see what's going on over there. Checking the sound levels. Always having problems with the sound levels. Not so much me, but you know, the guests. When I have guests on, I don't like to be louder than, you know, I like to have an equal footing. And then, you know, having a conversation with Patrick Jordan, and you know, I'm listening to my voice over his, and I'm like, I really should kind of try to get a lock on this. Because what Patrick Jordan has to say and what Clint has to say are, you know, much more important than what I have to say. At least in the aggregate, you know, of things. So welcome to UCY here today, Sunday. Busted out the Nobody can hear that. Gotta get that in tune for show. So, yeah, I think I don't even have the chat room here. Am I blocking it? I might be blocking it. Ugh. I gotta turn that off. No, maybe. Trust the site. Reload the page. I turn this up a bit. Got the chat room. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe do. Maybe do. Maybe don't. All right. Morning. We'll be right back. That's, you know, the sign of a... Actually, the guitar wasn't in tune, but it sounded like it was the other day when I took it out. Dirty there. Little dirty there, little dirty here, little dirty there. So, as I said earlier, welcome to the show. I'm a mess nowadays when it comes to, just really being able to really kind of knock out a lot of research. And it turns out that a lot of the research that I have done has been skewed, but then you have to understand the deception that's out there. And I think that's why my path Clint, Patrick Jordan, that I've been able to get to this point, to be able to communicate with these great researchers. I mean, this is just there's no denying the that some people have an incredible ability to. Just hunt down and find truth where others just kind of repeat and do, things that that the system wants them to do, to push them far away from the realities, so that they're parroting and repeating things that just aren't true. And ultimately, the further that you get to, the further that you get down the road. Those little bits of the 80% truths, the 20% bullshit is going to accumulate. 80-20 sounds like a good fact, factor, but, when you get down the road, it's going to accumulate and, you're just going to look silly. And I just kind of, I've looked silly. But, we understand, we recognize our mistakes, and then we move in a direction of, change direction. And, you realize that you've been yanked, So I guess that's, that's part of the process when the world is so horrifically full of shit. And you get to, you just get to a point where you either continue down that path or you get moved into, your alignment gets straightened out and you start moving right. You start moving in the right direction. Let's check this out. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's see how this goes. Mm. It's not the one I wanted. Let's do the far out track.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. All righty then. Had to get that out of my system today. I'm sweating in my armpits and my elbow pits, if that's even a thing. Anyway. All right, so let's bust out the coffee here. This is a relaxed session this morning. This is a jam session. Clint's going to be on. We're gonna have a nice conversation. We're going to learn something. Every time I talk to this man, I learn something new about the language, the, you know, the legalism, the just everything that goes along with the incredible deception. People just say, oh, yeah, we've been deceived. This small group of bankers took over this, and now they're holding the United States government hostage. Not the case. No, this is – the conspiracy is government. They got together and said, let's create a government so that we will rule. We'll make this constitution. It'll be only for us and our posterity, and fuck anybody else. Anybody else who thinks they're going to get it on this action, we're gonna smash them down. We're going to smash them down like a nail. Where the hammer, there the nail. Get it? See? How's everybody doing out there? How's everybody doing out there? Let me kill this thingy here. There's Charles O'Chelly. Good morning. That was 10:15. I don't know whether he's bailed or not. Let me know if you're still around, buddy. He's always connected. He's always locked in. You got me locked in. Locked on UCYEI. You got me locked in, locked on UCYEI. Reminds me, Axl Rose is coming back. He's like 150 pounds heavier than he was when he welcomed us to the jungle. It's amazing how these rock acts come back. And I saw Don Dokken. In Allentown a number of years ago. And it was really pathetic because he really couldn't even sing anymore. He couldn't sing those high parts anymore. You know, like Burning Like a Flame. Burning Like a Flame. He couldn't even hit that. So it was just not even worth it. Not that I was a big Dokken fan to begin with. To give you that perspective, not a big Don Dokken fan, bruh. But you know, I guess it was all right. You know, and then he got involved with Freddy Krueger and became the Dream Warrior, telling you not to dream anymore. I guess that was a, you know, or maybe it might have been another message inside of music. Don't dream, Freddy will be there. But I want that big house and I want that big car. No, Freddy will be there. With his razor blade finger glove. Welcome to the buffet. That's true. I love these little thermoses that keep the coffee. Well, not as hot, but keeps it good for long time. And keeps the coffee good for long time. Not cold. Keep it nice. That's language in theocracy. I like and I'm even there already. I mean, I called this a coffee holder and was chastised because I called it a coffee holder. I couldn't think to say, but And even my licks are choppy and crappy and dirty. But that's just all, you know, that's just all right off the cuff there. I don't even play any of that stuff there. I mean, I don't play it prior to playing it here. It's just there, and then give me a key, and I'll try to stay in the key. Oh, yeah, Striper, huh? There you go. Hey, there's the Ocelli effect. You're in the chat room, bruh. You're in the chat room. All right. Hope all is well. You and the family there. Chuckles. It's good to see you in there, buddy. And, well, let's just hopefully some of this information is... I wouldn't want to be chastised about the things that I've, you know, that I've been misled about. We've all been misled. And so we've all been barking up trees, you know. I'll do it now. It's insane. I mean, just think about it. Just think about how insane all of this is. You know, I gave Clint a shout yesterday. We talked for about an hour, just kind of like, you know, seeing where he's at. He's releasing more and more of his work, his life work. He's going to be putting it together very soon. I've gotten a little bit of it. Just to understand that this, and I said to him, I said, and I'm going to reiterate this when he's back on it, if I remember, that, you know, I'm, even before I heard about, you know, the Corporation Nation, or, you know, maybe after I started understanding that we've been deceived greatly, I would say, you know, this is not what God intended. This is not what God intended. And there is the key. You know, the Bible didn't say make a church. The Bible says pray in, you know, in solitude by yourself, not with groups of people. But some piece of shit out there said, let's create something here and then we'll just make a whole lot of fucking money off of it. I don't think God ever intended money. Mammon is what it's called. Mammon. And then you could say, like, what's going on out there? Are they all these different things that are going on that were predicted in the book of Revelations? Like, what are they making this out to happen? You know, are they making this happen? The weather anomalies, you know, different things of that nature. What are we? Or is this just a... I mean, we know things are being manipulated. We know that, you know, the weather's being manipulated. We know that HAARP and things like that, with all these extremely low frequencies, these ELFs, can create earthquakes. And we've been seeing a lot more of them. And of course, in the book of Revelations, there it is. There it all is, you know. It's all... it's all in the good book, right? It's all in the good book. And, How do we There you go. All right. Let's see here. Let's see. So it really is just, you know, the world's a fucking mess, and it's going to get worse. You could take the George Carlin approach where he just says, oh, the more killing, the more death, you know, it's going to be exciting, you know, when he would refer to the the Gulf War and things like that. So let's see what we got. Clint. Let me get Mr. Clint in here. Oh, I'm sorry. No, Clint. Using the wrong terminologies again. Please forgive me. Please forgive me. You could take the George Carlin approach where he just says, oh, the more killing, the more death. You know, it's going to be exciting. You know,
to be on your end, Clint.
When he would refer to the. The Gulf War and things like that. So let's see.
Hey, I got you.
There I am.
Hey, good morning.
Sorry.
No worries. Just kind of, you know, it's just one of those willy-nilly types of mornings, you know, a little bit of, gloom and doom, a little bit of rock in the room, and,
I'm enjoying the music, man.
Thank you. Thank you. I was wondering what the heck I was going to play, and then I just thought, you know, let me just play one of these backing tracks and go at it.
That's the way to do it, man. That's the best. You know, that's what I used to do. I was all into playing the lead guitar way back when, and I'd just loop something, and then, you know, I had a 4-track tape recorder, and I'd loop something and just jam 8-10 hours a day. Just, you know, because like you, I thought everything was so messed up that I had to lose myself in the music, you know?
Yeah. And I would just, back in the 80s, I would just, because as I said to you with school, I was like, oh, I don't even want to be here. Like, oh, when's this going to be over? You know? So I would just, I would come home, I would put on a Rush album and pull the guitar out and then just, you know, start jamming. And then 3 or 4 hours would go by.
Yeah,
you know,
I can't say I miss those days of the bleeding fingers, but yeah, I was so. It's such a passion, you know, when you get into it, and then, you know, eventually I got to the point where I just kind of reversed, and I said I started writing songs, you know, picked up the acoustic guitar and just started mellowing out, where I was angry before, and then I was starting to. Just to chill out a little bit and grew to like, you know, just kind of strumming and singing and that kind of thing. So,
right. But I mean, was it, was this like in your LA days? Were you jamming in your LA days or was this like prior to?
Well, I started when I was 17. So, and I'm 44, almost 44 in a couple months. I started with the guitar. And then I got into keyboards and started just recording music on keyboards. So, you know, hours and hours and hours of music I got recorded, but I haven't looked at it for so long. And I didn't know what I was doing back then either. I didn't know how to read music and didn't know hardly anything, but I could put sounds together. And for some reason it sounded good, you know, and so it was cool. I liked it.
So, yeah, I mean, I started playing like woodwind instruments, so I learned, you know, the structure of the notes, but other than that, it was when I started playing guitar, probably like 12 or 13, my brother had already started playing, so that was more of a, you know, kind of pulled me away from the woodwind. You know, I was playing like clarinet, and then I wanted to get away from that because it was so like lame. And then I wanted to kind of get into saxophone, and then of course the cost of these the cost of these instruments were you know, like $1,000-$2,000, and you know, money was always an issue. So I just figured, let me just, you know, start playing guitar, picking away at the guitar, and then And then Pat got a an SG. We got a Gibson SG. and then that was it. I mean, when you're learning how to play guitar and you get to play on a Gibson with the action being like really nice and, you know, cuts back on the finger, the pain of, you know, having to, you know, with the steel and creating these calluses and everything. So yeah, I just kind of kept it going forward, but never really took a lesson. You know, I mean, everything that I do is, I think that if I had, where would I be today? You know, maybe some kind of friggin', you know, one of those titles, you know,
perfect. Most people who get into the music industry, like myself, you know, I tried, you know, we played in bands. I played with a couple of decent, you know, people, but most people that get into music go the direction I went, which was to get into like sound design, sound production, that kind of thing. You know, working the boards, and you know, you get frustrated because you know the music industry. First of all, it's full of drugs, full of counterculture, full of all kinds of shit that you don't want to be involved with.
Right.
And so for me, my solution to that was to just make other kinds of sounds, and you know, so all of a sudden I'm doing video games and TV and commercials and movies, and that was cool. You know, for the amount of time I did it, but I still, you know, there's nothing like going back to the guitar and especially for me, the acoustic and just, it's just something so soulful about it, and it's portable. That helps too. No big computer or board or anything.
Right.
But I go back to high school. I remember vividly, I was in a German class learning German, the German language. And I remember joining the German club because they went skiing twice a year. And we lived real near to Tahoe.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Right. So fell in love with, I'll just say her first name, with Amanda. She's a redhead. Mm. And, followed her into choir because I was so head over heels with this girl that I actually quit my German and joined a choir. And I went in there and I auditioned, which seemed ridiculous at the time. And the teacher told me I had perfect pitch. And I had no idea what the hell that meant at the time. Didn't matter. I was really only there for, I mean, I was following my, my other brain. So my membrane, and so I got into that, and I started singing, and I got into this top choir in a college after that, really with no intention to do so, but I learned how to sing and actually use the diaphragm correctly and all that. And you know, then at 17, right before I got into college, I got cancer and got all depressed and all crappy, and that is when I picked up the guitar, right towards the end of high school. And if it wasn't for that guitar, and being able to sit there and like I said, have my fingers bleed, I don't know what I would have done with myself, because I was severely depressed, didn't know what to do, got diagnosed with diseases I didn't have, which is why I hate doctors. And you know, without that guitar, without that tool, without that ability to lose myself in that, I would have killed myself. I would have done something stupid. I would have ended up in a totally different place. So there's something to be said about music. And of course, music is being taken out of schools. It's turned into something other than, you know, you said the clarinet sucks. I, you know, at this point, I love all instruments. Yeah. There's something about the ability to do that it's so soulful. And whether it's a flutophone or electric guitar, man, they're all something about you. I've heard, being in Hollywood, man, I've heard people play every instrument to the point where you would not believe your ears.
Yeah, for me it was like, it was kind of clarinet was just not very cool. That's my thing, but the the ability to, you know, to kind of be able to play one of these reeded instruments, I think I could still do it today.
Yeah.
I think I could grab a saxophone and, you know, I wouldn't want to be like a Kenny G or anything like that. That's kind of, you know, beautiful, you know, calming music for sure.
I'll bet you Kenny G can rock out if he wants to, but I think he has his, you know, reputation sort of thing that he's built up. But I'll bet you he can kick some ass. I mean, let's face it. When you learn one style of music so well, there's no way you can't play others.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's and you strive for that too, because you know once things just become really easy, you know, like blues for guitar players, very easy. Which always just kind of like amazed me, because Eric Clapton was always like, he always would, you know, put out decent music. I mean, I wasn't like completely into it until I got one of his 1982 releases. It was called August, and it was like a different kind of sound coming out of Clapton. He had Phil Collins on, you know, on the drums. And a number of different songs that really just kind of said, oh, okay, well, he can do this. But still, it was like he would sit there and he would play some of the easiest, like, little notes. And then as I got older and I started, you know, seeing people like Eric Johnson and Steve Vai and a lot of these other people that had, you know, that could do that, and then times like 100 – I was just thinking to myself, I was like, what is he doing? What, you know, can he actually play more than that? Or is he just the songwriter? And then you got to look back and say, he is the songwriter. He is the, you know, people know him for him being slow hand. And you know what? That's all they wanted, you know? So I sit here and I'm thinking about, I want to do all these like arpeggios and things like that, that kind of, you know, the pick scraping this morning wasn't a good, you know, session, but you hear some of these guys play and you think to yourself, like, how did that even happen? Was it the theory that got them to that point where, you know, like an Eric Johnson will sit there and then just kind of like play like a sweet little song. And then he just, you know, attacks the guitar and plays all these incredible notes, incredibly clean, and you're just like, you have the guitar in hand, and then you just kind of like sit back and you say, I remember
in my profession, specifically in the sound, you know, people were always the same. They hated the CD. They hated the cleanness, so-called, of the CD, because the CD would it would mess up the highs and mess up the lows in order to compress it. And, you know, it's just digital music is not the same as that old, you know, compressed stuff that you used to get on tape. And, you know, that was a big deal for people to have their original, you know, their vinyl or their tape or whatever. And we of course used reel to reels still when I was in college, for sound, but we never actually used them in practice, which is a shame, because I know that was a big complaint about the 80s music as well, is that they started using computers and they couldn't get that big sound that you'd hear back then. So my thing about it is, like I said, I was doing all this lead stuff, all the, you know, this kind of stuff you were playing too. It's great to be able to play like Stevie Vai and all these guys, but I find it I found it unfulfilling. In other words, I could do it, but what was the point? Unless I could play a good chord, unless I could play slow, unless I could play, to me, the dirty sound, that you're talking about, lets me know that there's a human, quote unquote, behind the music. And I actually love to hear a mistake. I love to hear a little scratch, a little scrape, a little off note every once in a while, because it makes me you know, cherish the fact that this is something that's coming from a man. It's coming from a male or female. It's coming from the soul, you know, and that that lets me know, as opposed to the computerized music stuff that, you know, where every note is perfectly put into place by a computer, where people's voices, you know, are auto-tuned or whatever the new system of that is, and you're not listening to the real thing. You know, you think you're listening to Madonna. You think you're listening to Britney Spears. You think you're listening to many, many singers, but what you're really listening to is a computer taking a really shitty voice and putting an algorithm on it and making it in perfect pitch or in perfect tune. And that just, I can't tell you how many times I've been watching concerts live, and I'll see them jumping around, literally jumping up in the air and landing and doing flips and still singing perfectly. And I'm like, obviously this is a record. Anybody out here who thinks this is live has got to be an idiot.
Right.
I mean, you cannot be so stupid as to think that you can run around and sing and still have no interruptions in your diaphragm. No, you know, what you're hearing for the most part is artificial. Right. And I can't, you know, it's like wrestling or anything else. I can't figure out why people want to watch something that's obviously fake.
Yeah, that is a question that you can ask about nearly everything going on out there, and not just the music as well. I can say so. Yeah, when I first started kind of doing this, I got a Mac and I had my amp and everything, and then what I did was I went out and I got this UX1, this Line 6 product. USB product. It can go Mac, Windows. And then I got this Alesis Multimix, where this microphone is just way too good for podcast. I think this is a vocal, this Audio Technica is like a vocal mic. Hmm. And I started thinking, well, I can do this. I can make this guitar sound like electronically, obviously the clean sounds are beautiful as well. And for some reason I've always been like, I've always needed the sustain or the reverb or something like that to kind of fill in some of the things, or maybe even, you know, some of my musical inadequacies, I guess you could say. You know, that's some of my baggage, I guess. But a lot of guitar players like a lot of reverb. I remember watching a video of Rush making one of their, I think it might have been Snakes and Arrows, and then this new sound engineer came in, and he was looking at Lifeson and saying, "Dude, you know, this is the way I want you to sound. This is the way that you should sound." And he's like, "No, man, give me some reverb." So he was fighting with him. He's like, "Give me some reverb. Give me some reverb," because, you know, it has this effect. I mean, the live effect is one thing. And so that's me right there. Give me some reverb. And I noticed that when I listen to Johnson or some of these electronic sounds that they put into these devices and into this software that, you know, is, you know, from, you know, an Eddie Van Halen or an Eric Johnson. And you can hear this delay afterwards that kind of fills it in. You know, I think it's clean. I think he likes to do it with this clean, powerful, not too much rasp. But then I think the delay that he puts on there kind of fills in some of the, if it's at the right time, especially the delay has to be in the right time with the song. Right, the beats, you know, the tempo of the song for it to. So, I mean, that's one thing I've not even, you know. And as I said, I
change tempo. I mean, Rush will change tempo like every every verse, every. And it's always a different tempo in each song, and it's very difficult to play. Mm-hmm. I mean, you have to have a very intuitive band, especially the bass player is kind of the people think the drums keep the beat, but the bass player is usually the one that's keeping the real timing down. And so I highly respect Geddy Lee.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll tell you, if it's a choice, again, this is that notion of what does my ear personally prefer. I love Rush, don't get me wrong. They're probably my favorite, if not second favorite group. But then I look at something like Pink Floyd, and you know, when this guy's doing something, writing a song or whatever, speaking of David Gilmour, my personal, you know, hero when it comes to the guitar, he doesn't ever get caught up in that perfection of sound or that perfection of timing. And that's why I think it so appeals to me, is that there's so much passion in it, as opposed to just this need to have everything so perfect. Right. And so when he's writing a song, it's not a matter of writing it at the specific moment he writes it, but he'll just hum or he'll sing nonsense, whether it's the words to the song or the guitar solo to the song or whatever. He just will fill it in with absolute nonsense, right? With his voice, and you know, it's free form, it's freestyle, and from that comes the song later on. From that, he can actually, you know, you know what you want to write about, you know what you want to sing about, you know what feeling the music gives you, but you don't know how to put it into words, because of course we've, you know, what are words but mere images of the real. So it's fascinating to watch this guy work on a song, and you know, Wish You Were Here, for instance, has his voice in there going do 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 do. You know, and you hear it in the background, and it sounds like an instrument, but it's obviously his voice. So I respect that much more than the technical aspect of music. I respect someone that has that feeling. I don't know how to put it into words, but that's my style.
Yeah, one of my favorite songs, Gilmour, is Murder. And I don't think it was Pink Floyd. I think it was his own stuff. The acoustic starts off with the acoustic. It's a capoed at the third fret. And just the beauty of his voice in the beginning of that song is just, it just blows me away. And every time I guess I don't know where I got it. Maybe I downloaded it or something like that. But I remember hearing it, you know, I remember hearing it on the radio from time to time, but then, you know, songs like On the Turning Away, you know, just a really, really awesome, you know, just that great voice that he has. I mean, and you can say Roger Waters, who kind of short-circuited himself over the last couple of years about siding with Palestine. But then again, that's what happens when you do that. You know, he totally is the voice of Pink Floyd, and for good reason. I mean, most of the songs, you know, were Gilmour sung. And another guitar player, Carlos Santana. When I was, you know, growing up listening to guitar. Listening to guitar solos that made me want to play guitar, you know, that made me want to play guitar better, you know. A song called I'm Winning. It's like, I'm winning, I'm winning. And he plays this clean, beautiful Gilmour-like guitar solo in there. And it was just like, wow, that just sounded so awesome, you know. And he just has, you know, he has that way of just kind of like grabbing the pick, you know, grabbing the pick with the three fingers and then just kind of like plucking it and pulling it. I mean, you've seen his style, I'm sure. And so he, to this day, with his, you know, doing songs with Rob Thomas, Michelle, what's her name? It was Michelle, I forget her name, cute little brunette. She was actually just on one of these shows. Samantha Bee, she was on another one of the you know, fake journalists on the Daily Show, and she was singing a song, or Michelle Branch was her name, and she was singing a song, and she put Ted Cruz's name into it. So I thought that was kind of funny because Ted Cruz is a piece of shit, but I also understand both sides. And I used to watch Bill Maher because, you know, when I didn't like George Bush, and I would say to myself, you know, well, maybe this, and then, you know, I would see the conservatives and the Republicans on there, and I would, you know, it's, and you can totally, I remember what it was like to be on the other side and then having to switch to the other side and then switch completely off.
Well, you compare some of those types of things, like Samantha Bee, awesome until she says something that you just cringe at, you know.
I think she's adorable and she's very funny, and then she does that whether she believes it or not, and you would have to think that she does, I guess maybe just because of her demographic, but she'll say something like, she obviously hates, I think she likes Bernie Sanders more than she likes Hillary Clinton, but I mean, like, anybody right now is like, they have to understand that Hillary is just full of shit, you know, but maybe, well, you know.
I never fool myself to think that these people are sincere or, you know, there are very few people I can put on my right hand, probably. People, you know, and people will dispute this, of course, your George Carlins or your, what's his name that was that died of cancer? I can't think of his name.
Bill Hicks. Yeah.
These people, they had no side. They just recognized the entirety of the bullshit. There was no, this is right or this is wrong. It's like, no, it's all wrong. You're fighting over something. You know, when B comes out and says something about abortion and how important it is to protect, you know, all kind of stuff, it's just, it makes you cringe because you know what that actually is, where that's actually coming from. It is not just some personal, you know, thing. It's so much deeper than that. So you know these people. You know, Daily Show is kind of like the Saturday Night Live phenomenon where all these new stars come from Saturday Night Live, from the main Jew, right? Well, same thing. You know, the Daily Show is spawning out a bunch of new personalities that speak on behalf of the Zionist agenda. It's that simple. So no matter how much you like him, Stephen Colbert, he's awesome. He really is awesome at what he does. That doesn't make him a good guy.
Right.
But it makes you like them, and you got to be so careful because you'll fall into that trap of a cult of personality, basically, and right. you can't do it. You cannot. There is no side. I think that's the most important thing. There's no side. There is what is right and what is wrong. There is no side to the truth. There's only truth. There's no side to truth. It's crap, and you really can recognize that when you watch these people, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, I will sit there and – oh, this is bizarre. I'm trying to pull up your blog, and it's taking, like, forever to get there, and then I keep down the bottom. I see transferring data from the Zion.com.
I should do an experiment, man. I'll go to Google. I'll type in my something, you know, I'll search for a reality – The reason I have a reality blogger is because you can't miss. I mean, there's only one reality blogger with one G, right? So you'd think that a search engine would pick it up and have no problem. But I go to Google, I type in reality blogger and some search key. I can only get other people's websites. I can never get my own. People who've copied my story or linked it or whatever. But it never pulls up the main source. I go to Yahoo. And there it is. So I only use Yahoo as my search engine because Yahoo still actually picks things up.
Right.
Especially when I'm searching prions and that kind of stuff that I really need all the results, not the censored stuff I'll get on Google. So, I mean, I don't recommend Google for anything. You know, if you're looking up my website on Google, you're not going to get it, or you'll get a hit every once in a while, but not the main thing. I noticed that a lot. Whereas InfoWars will come right up.
Yeah, and he's you know, there he's getting tied in with Drudge now, and he had Tucker Carlson on there sometime towards the end of last year. So
his enemies become his friends, then they're enemies again until they're friends again.
Yeah, it sounds and seems bizarre. I still find it very, very odd that he had, you know, David Duke on there and had him on for 2.5 hours. That was definitely a moment that I, you know, just sat there like, I wonder what's going on here.
Yeah, well, and then David Icke, you know, he talks the biggest crap about David Icke, and then when David Icke comes on, they're good buddies. It's disturbing to me. You kind of want to slap these people and say, why are you going on this show when this guy is, you know, trying to counteract your purpose?
Right. And I mean, like lately, he's been fine with, I think it was just in the beginning when I was listening to Jones and then I was listening to Icke and said, you know, these guys should probably speak together. And then, you know, Jones is there and he said, yeah, he says all these really good things and he says all these really relevant things and then he brings the lizards into it and he's really fucking everything up for everybody. And then, I'm still trying to pull up Reality Blogger here because I want to talk about your recent posts. Da da da. But yeah, it's a mess like we were talking about yesterday. Oh my God, are you serious here? Flashback is out of date.
I wrote something quite a while ago when I'd find, you know, it comes in levels, my disdain for that that thing, that InfoWar. I wrote a couple of articles on basically it was disclosure. The thing that bothers me the most about all of this is that, you know, people can't see through what's actually happening, and that's this sort of disclosure without any type of
punishment, right?
Well, not even just punishment, but it never, you know, never will go to any kind of situation where it'll be remedied or solved. It's just information overload, and
yeah, disclosure without resolution. This disclosure without any type of, you know, resolution or you know, a path. It seems like there's a path being drawn, but it never gets routed.
Well, yeah, and so we're primed to accept all this stuff. That's the trick, you see. That's the hard part for people to see, I think. So this particular one I wrote on my blog was the great disclosure is what we're seeing, which you could call an apocalypse, because apocalypse or revelation just means the secrets coming undone or the knowledge being
failing.
Yeah, so what we're having is a great disclosure, but it's to cause informed consent, and that's the trick. You see, the trick is to get all this knowledge in your heads, to know the conspiracy but never do anything about it, and that way, I'm convinced that's what the news really is and what these websites really are to disclose the master plan. Because that way they can tell you, we told you so. You didn't do anything about it. It's always the same in every science fiction. It's always the same. It's always, hey, you knew it, and you didn't do anything about it. And this is that sort of Talmudic notion where, you know, if I tell you my plans to harm you, and I harm you after telling you and you haven't done anything, well, then I have no karma. That's the Talmudic way. If I inform you and you don't do anything, then you're giving silence. You're giving acceptance to what I am planning on doing. I've told you what I'm going to do to you. Therefore, I can't harm you. I have no karma in my actions against you because I warned you. I told you. You didn't say no. I don't accept that. And so we're going to do it to you. Thus, you have a biological, active biological weapons program in Title 50 and Title 38 or 32. I can't remember. You have, you know, that's being used against us. You have so many things that are so harmful to you, so many groups and your technocracy and your all this stuff that's happening because you're not doing anything about it. And why aren't you doing anything about it? Because Alex Jones is talking about it, because it's being spoken of and it appears to be being dealt with. And everybody's always telling you, we're winning, we're winning. Hey, we're winning. They're the elite are running. They're scared. They're not scared. They've got us exactly where they've got. Don't fall for that. Don't fall for that tagline followed by, oh, and by the way, buy my product. No, they're not scared. The system is so powerful, so extremely, extremely controlling. But we're told that they're on the run. Right, that's the tagline. It's such bullshit. We are controlled in so many different ways, defeated spiritually, emotionally, educationally, absolutely a defeated people. And yet these guys are telling you, hey, we got them on the run. You know, just by talking about this disclosure without any kind of sanction, you know, disclosure. You're giving them consent. I'm telling you, this is an operation, a psychological operation to get your consent, because you're listening and you're not doing a damn thing about it. You're allowing the most horrific crimes against nature, against man, all over the world, in your behalf, through the United States. You're allowing that to happen. You're supporting it with your pension funds. You're supporting it with your taxes. You're supporting it with all the things, and nothing. No one is doing anything about it, and it's a disgusting state that we're in, and it's a very well-organized information campaign. It's not disinformation, just information. We're in the information age, and it is information that has become so valuable, because through that, the entire thing has just it's gotten out of proportion at this point where everything is a lie.
Yeah. And I mean, even if people go out there and they think that they're doing something, they're just either handing out, you know, Alex Jones Endgame or, you know, one of his other documentaries. They think that they're doing something because, you know, I remember just, you know, being in there thinking, hearing some of these stories and thinking, oh, wow, it's catching on. Somebody's doing something, you know, more people are catching on to, you know, Jones's, you know, plea for help, his message, the InfoWar message. And, you know, I just, I feel ashamed.
Yeah, well, we all should, because again, you know, I always go back to the, If you can understand just this one thing, then you can understand why all this is happening. And it's the definition that they give in the courts for freedom of religion. Because if you were to act against this evil, you would be acting religiously, not legally. You wouldn't be able to do it legally. There's no fixing. There's no solution in the legal realm. There's no remedy. There's nothing that you can do against a system that is not your own, right? To act religiously would be opposed to that, would be acting, actually having a moral action, a moral direction that you take based on your moral beliefs that this is wrong, that this is absolute, that you're not going to support it, right? You're not going to just sit back and be silent. And so the definition in the legal realm of freedom of religion, which we've all fallen for, to think that we, oh, well, that means I am free not to believe. I'm free to do anything I want. I don't have to be religious. Or I can be any Christian I want. I can do this. And yet nobody's actually acting the part, right? So freedom of religion in the legal term is very much like what we talked about with the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve is independent. It's free from government in the capacity of its political nature. In other words, it can do things without saying, hey, government, can we do this, right? It has a little bit of freedom. And so that is mistaken as the same thing as freedom of religion. Now, when the courts define freedom of religion, here's, you know, it's real simple. You have the freedom to believe, and you have the freedom to act. Belief is free. You can believe, you can think in your head whatever you want, but your freedom of action, your freedom to actually think and act, is highly regulated and subject to government law. You cannot. It is illegal to act religiously in this country, and that means, that doesn't mean, you know, all the crap you hear from the church. That's not what it's talking about. It's talking about you cannot go and actually hold any politician, anybody, any cop, any judge, anybody responsible for their actions on a moral basis, because everything is legal, which is the antithesis of morality. It's amoral or immoral compared to moral law. That's the trick. The trick is to understand that you, when they say freedom, they mean the opposite of freedom. They mean franchise. They mean a corporate licensure to basically act in a certain way, but you can't go past what is licensed or permitted. This is why nothing is happening. This is why this beast system is and this AI is happening. This is why chimeras are happening. This is why genetic alteration of us is happening, because we're not allowed as a citizen to act against it. It's not allowed. We don't have the right. Right. To act religiously or morally or spiritually or whatever you want, you know, whatever tag makes you feel better about yourself, you don't have the right to act that way. And until you understand that whatever these guys talk about, whatever we talk about on this show, ain't doing a jack shit except to maybe inform. But remember, informed consent is silence. Silence does not mean that you're not speaking. It means, in the legal parlance, it means that you're not acting. Silence of action is really what that means. So it's not just, you know, when I have the right to remain silent, that doesn't mean just sit there and shut up. That means act in any way, shape, or form. Right. That's important.
And I mean, there was a number of stories that were out there that, and of course, it was an InfoWars thing, where people were being, they were meeting in a house, and they were, you know, like a Bible study or a Bible type meeting that maybe got a little bit too public. And so they came in and the authorities came in and broke it up. And then I'm sitting there, and Jones was like, oh, you can't even do this anymore. And then through your information, we're finding out that, you know what, you're not allowed to do that. Only the churches are allowed to do that. So the churches do what – and if they see you doing that, then that's you cutting in on their, you know, on their profitability, so that you can't it's like, shame on you. Don't think that you can, you know, that you can praise outside of one of these 501c3. Realms. Is that pretty accurate? But then, of course, Jones will never say that, in a sense.
Yeah, well, one of the congressmen, I don't have it in front of me, but his quote was basically that you cannot, and this is a congressman officially on the record who said, you cannot have religious freedom from a church that is licensed to any state. You can't. It's not. When you're a creation or corporation of the state, you cannot be above the law. Your whole existence, your whole artificial person, i.e. corporation, is completely dependent on legal law, and legal is opposed to religion. It's and when I say religion, I mean, again, we're always talking about the difference between a noun and a verb. the name of religion is not the verb or the action of religion. It's two different things. What you believe and what you do are two different things. Unless your actions are in tune with your beliefs, then you have no religious freedom. Again, there's no thought crimes yet, right? There's no soon. You know, soon they're going to be measuring body language and saying that you're angry so you can't fly or whatever. But right now, you still have a little bit of freedom internally, but you have no freedom externally. You cannot act on your beliefs. So a church can only do what it's licensed to do in government under legal law, which is opposed to the very notion of the verb, the action of religion. There is no natural freedom in this country. There is only franchise. When you become a citizenship of the United States, you give up all those freedoms, those natural freedoms, those natural rights, in other words, negative rights, and you accept positive rights, ones that are granted to you and licensed to you. And those rights just happen to be listed in the U.S. Code. Again, I don't know why, but nobody seems to care that Title 42, Section 1981, which I think should be made into a T-shirt, it tells you what your equal rights are. And it's pain, punishment, license, taxes, and extortion. Those are your rights. And I can't seem to get that across to people. I can't seem to get across to you that if you're a United States citizen, it is your right to be extorted. It is your right to be taxed. These are what your rights. You don't have any other rights because your unalienable rights, which they call the God-given rights, are gone. You've abandoned God by taking an artificial person, which the Bible tells you not to, and the Bible is part of the common law. So you see the way that everything is manipulated and taken away from us. We think that citizenship is this beautiful thing that gives us rights, but what it gives us is a contractual obligation, which has nothing to do. The notion of a moral law is something that you do regardless of anything else. Nothing can stop you. That is the test. That's the moral test. That's the notion. You know, and so if you have a system that forces you into a strict law, which we call Roman law, then you have no you're not making a choice. You're never making a choice. You're looking up a law. You're asking yourself, what is legal? You're not asking what is right. You're not asking what is moral. You're not asking what would a religious man do. You're not asking what would Jesus do, which is actually what you're supposed to do, it turns out, even though I hate that freaking Christian crap that comes out. But, you know, in this case, what should I do? And you're not going to the Bible. You're not going to any ancient teachings. You're going to the legal law, which is mostly written by dead people, and you're following it completely opposed to any kind of religious law or action. That is freedom of religion. Because remember, the word freedom is opposed to real freedom, and the word religion in legal is opposed to real religion or religious action. Until we get that, until we get the opposite structure of the languages, we're going to keep thinking we're free. We're going to keep thinking that we have choice, you know, within the system as opposed to without. The only choice is to be in or out. There's no other choice. That's the only choice. That's your election, as the Bible says. So, you know,
you set it up so that you can't participate outside of this. It's their system. If you're not in it, you cannot work. You cannot, you know, it's, you know, just totally fucked up. I mean, outside of it, you're free of it. At the same time, being out of it is, huge transition you're finding, you know, you're doing your best to, you know, trying to separate yourself from it. And at the same time, you're finding that, you know, it's in order to be able to, to do certain things that you have to participate in some way. So they know that, and that's why they created the citizenship. Because it's not the only ship, but you know, unfortunately, it is the demon death ship.
Well, it's the opposite of choice. That's the real kicker. Now, what I find so interesting, and you know, there's things about the Bible that are so far beyond anything it actually says, right? You kind of have to get to the point where you see where you're seeing the entirety of Scripture, not just pointing to certain verses or certain this, which people do, you know. And you know, there's a maxim of law that's very important because it pertains to the law. And if you think about what the legal law, it's millions of pages. It's nothing that anybody can ever know. As opposed to the Bible, which you can know because it's self-evident. It's things that you don't have to prove. They're self-evident. They're things that are true in nature that don't need a name or a title. They're obvious, right? But in legal law, it's not that way. And the most important lesson that I've learned from the Bible, in its whole, taking its whole, not the maxim of law says that nothing can be understood in parts. In other words, the part can never describe the whole, right? Now, that's a self-evident truth. You can't just point to a verse in the Bible and say, look, that's my, no. You got to know the whole thing. You got to understand the whole concept of it, the whole thing that's trying to be taught. One of the most important lessons, and this is very difficult to grasp until you grasp it. You know, people are like, why didn't Jesus in the Bible, the character, why didn't he ever give a straight answer? Why do people speak in parables? It pisses me off. And of course, the Bible tells you, you know, in the mouth of a fool or in the ears of a fool, a parable is worthless, right? So if you're a fool, if you're so stuck in this realm of artificialness, then you're not going to understand the purpose of a parable. And what I figured out is that Jesus was untouchable, man. This guy was a badass. He wasn't meek. When he said turn the other cheek, for instance, that refers to the, I believe it's the book of Jasher, which is mentioned in the Bible, but it's not in the Bible, which said, you know, used to say that if you're a slave, your master could hit you, and I'm paraphrasing, on the left cheek, for instance, and that would be lawful according to the Mosaic law, but if he hits you on the right side, or it might be vice versa, then he's accosting you illegally and you or unlawfully, and you can fight back. And so when Jesus says, turn the other cheek, and the king translates it to just simply mean, oh, turn the other cheek, let all this horrible stuff happen to you. No, you're turning your other cheek, because if you turn your other cheek when he strikes you, and he strikes you, then you can defend yourself. See, he's not telling you to be a pacifist. He's telling you cause them to do you the harm that, you know, without that breaks their own law, then you can defend yourself within their law, right? So there's nothing meek or pacifist about this guy except when it comes to just pointless offense. In other words, don't just go and harm somebody, but always defend yourself. Don't ever let this kind of tyranny happen. You know, always learn the tricks that allow you to fight back. So turn your other cheek, right? That's a totally different purview of what that verse says, which the church will tell you, oh, just turn your other cheek, allow government, follow the law of land, follow the legal law, don't allow, you know, don't get angry, just be a Christian. No, that's not Christian. That's not Christ-like at all. Right, so that's a great thing, but the important thing is that Jesus always spoke in parables, and what that means is that he never spoke directly to anybody. He never slandered anybody. He never used anybody's name because he didn't respect them. In that way, in other words, in a legal sense, if you asked him a question, he would tell you the parable of this, or the parable of the fool, or the parable of the whale, and or whatever it was, he would tell you a story about what would happen to somebody, anybody in the world that would follow that course. And you either got the parable and you realized, oh, okay, the fool he's talking about is me, but he's not saying it. Or the wise man he's talking about, a wise man would do this, or a fool would do this. If we all talked to each other that way, and especially if we went to court and we talked to them, quote-unquote, that way, that we would be Christ-like, because we're not answering any questions directly. We're not affirming anything. We're not, he who affirms must prove. So if I affirm a fact, I'm now required to prove that. This is why you're supposed to speak negatively or parabolically. You're supposed to speak in ways that can teach, not just give your personal opinion based on your personal evidence or your personal experience. No, you're supposed to have that wisdom, that higher knowledge of self-evidence that, well, obviously if you go down this course, you know, this is going to happen. Some harm is going to come to you or someone else. But if you take this course, something good will happen and you'll become wiser. And so he always spoke in those terms, and that's why he was untouchable, basically. So that was one of the most important lessons in the Bible, but it's nothing that's spoken. It's nothing that's actually offered to you in any sort of, tangible, like, this is what you're supposed to do. That's why it says over and over, you know, men will choke on their own conceit. A dog will always choke on his own vomit, return to his own vomit, right? Talking about people like Alex Jones returning to their concepts and their words. You know, the fool will do this. The fool will do this. The wise man will do this. You know, when I learned that, It took me in a completely different perspective on everything, because then I could look at things all of a sudden. I could look at all people and all things in a more a completely different perspective, or I could follow the path of what might happen, as opposed to saying, well, no, I saw a documentary or a special on TV or some radio host told me this, and so no, you shouldn't do it. When I know nothing about the subject, right? And I don't know, there's something about that ultimate lesson that, when it says follow Christ, well, that's one of the things you should follow, is that parabolic or allegoric notion, the anthropomorphization, the personification of concepts into things that can be told in story form. And that's the fascinating thing, man, is that the Bible is the story of law. But the law of man has no story. We are we're making the story as we go. But the Bible is the law deciphered into a story. And so to understand the story, you have to go to the cipher, which are the lexicons, the concordances, the dictionaries that explain what each word actually meant in its original intent. So you have this beautiful story, but nobody has the cipher. Nobody has the dictionaries or nobody's using them. And they're instead speaking in, of course, dog Latin, this English language that is specifically designed to obfuscate the knowledge.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Can you give us a parable, a really good parable, like something that so that people listening can, you know, start examining their own answers and things that. That they might have said before, but now having understood, maybe people don't even know what parables are. When I heard it first, I was like, what the hell? And so it was very powerful. And just, hearing it yesterday, and I'm glad that you reiterated it today on the program. So can you give us a parable, like a really powerful one that,
The one of the interesting ones is the he-goat of goats. Which it took me a while to really, if you really study that notion, because, so let's take the Alex Jonesian model here, where he's always saying, don't be sheep, right? We're familiar with the Baphomet statue that they want to put up, which has the head of a goat, right? So what Jones is causing people to do, and people like Jones, all those guys that are just, get your guns, right? They're saying be a goat. They're literally driving you towards towards this notion of being a goat instead of a sheep. And the coolest thing that I found out that really made me understand what their purpose is in that sort of controlled information thing is this notion of the he-goat of goats. So they're driving you to be a goat, be independent and have your own, you know, opinion about things and never, you know, every radio station is set up to where you've, well, we've got every opinion imaginable, so listen to this show, and then this show's going to be completely opposite, right? Wait a minute. Again, how do you – you don't have one – you don't have right or wrong. You don't – excuse me. You don't have a – you don't have different versions of what is right. There's only one right, and it's that self-evidence. Again, that self-existence of things. You know what's artificial and what's real, and that's – only what's real is what's right. So the he-goat of goats is the notion that – He says, you know, that God will separate his flock, and on his right hand will be the sheep, the those who follow Christ, in other words, the shepherd, and on his left hand will be the goats. And the goats are, you know, to put it shortly, to put it parabolically, it will burn in hell, and the remnant, the sheep, will ascend, right? What you know, those are terms again that are parabolic, that you have to understand that death and life are spiritual concepts, not when it comes to law, which would take forever to explain. But so he tells the parable of the he-goat, and you know, you can type in he-goat and really get an idea. But the whole concept of not being a sheep is completely against Scripture. The point is to actually be a sheep and follow the shepherd. But if you're a goat, then you're going against that flock, if you will, which is what we're all doing. And we're all told to be a goat. We're told to be hard-headed, in other words, right? So again, parabolic. We're hard-headed. We're so convinced of our own crap. And in the Bible, it actually, one of the parables calls us dumb asses. And that's in the Bible. I love it. You know, they actually use the word dumb ass.
We got less than probably 30 seconds here. You guys get over to realityblogger.wordpress.com. Check out Clint's article on transgender bathrooms. Very simple solution. And he's also, well, check that one out. That's the first and foremost. There's a lot of great information in there. And thanks for hanging out with us today here on Cold Reality Radio. There's more great information today on the network. And, you know, you're going to hear Clint on here from time to time. So he'll expand on a lot of the things he talks about. Stick around.
Rounds a minute, try to stop them. Don't put that on your wish list, that's retarded babble. Protesters make you Hitler as soon as they start to rabble. They are nothing but fishes in the barrel. It doesn't have to be Christmas for a carol. Some decorate with ornamental decorum. Some perform shock and awe on Hanukkah and Purim. That's where my job come in. I am a blessing to the mercenary for the corporation selling weapons to them. Any potential competitor step into them. I'm authorized to knock them out and stick a GPS into them. They want to sell uranium.